Well, this must be a very exciting time for all you. We're back with another episode of The Suspendables. I'm Jungle Jim, coming up on today's show with Russ Courtnell. We got to talk about Mike Babcock. A bunch of fallout from this firing. Bunch of players speaking out. And not just speaking out, lowbrow shit, baby. Lowbrow stuff. We address that topic and this suspension of four games only for this gross couple of cross-checks that happened in the game the other night. Russ has got plenty to say about that, and he's pissed. He's pissed about the suspension. We also got poker. Russ got his ass kicked. A hilarious story about being on a plane with Wayne and a few other guys playing some cards. That and much, much more coming up in The Suspendables. All right, folks, here we go. My favorite time of the week. Another show of The Suspendables coming at you. Coming at you full
stop. Doesn't get old.
It never gets old. There's Russ Courtnell on the other end. I'm Jungle Jim. And we are The Suspendables. This podcast comes to you once a week. And we got our editor, Stevie, back in Ottawa doing all the work for us now. Rusty, what's going on? How was the week? What are you doing?
Oh, I had a busy day yesterday. I was watching football. This
will be good. Your busy day. Okay, take us through it.
Contracted a cottage up at Gosser, so it was a good day to a retired hockey player, J.F. Picard. So he's going to be our newest member of Gosser. So yesterday was a fun day. I just been working out, trying to keep the weight off, having fun, drinking lots of wine, cooking lots of food.
How's the keeping the weight off thing going?
It's been good.
It's been good.
Peloton. I got this love affair going with Allie Love on Peloton, my teacher. Oh, she's cute.
She's your Peloton crush?
Is that it? My Paris called me today, and I was just finishing the ride. Yep. And I was huffing and puffing, and she goes, oh my God, it sounds like you're having sex. And I go, yeah, with Allie Love on the bike.
Oh, there we go. Nice.
Kids watch some sports and soccer, hockey. And
you're active.
Yep. Busy week for Russ and the fam.
We made a, we're doing like our little shout outs now, Rusty. I know you got lots of friends, so. I got a list of people, by the way, who love the shirt. I got 30 or 40 shirts I got to get delivered now to people. The suspendable shirt.
This was all Jim's idea, by the way, so he gets full credit. We didn't know that little Jimmy up in Edmonton was an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I didn't mean to be. and you told me. You told me right off the hop. Don't do it. You're going to regret it. I said, no, fuck, it'll be fine. I'll knock this out like nothing. I get messages. So if you want a shirt, you email me, junglejerome@yahoo.com, and you just e-transfer $35. It's simple, Russ. Nothing can go wrong. And I go, make sure you include in the notes, you know, your shipping address and your size. Okay. The first three I get on these e-transfers, you know what they e-transfer your money, right?
Yeah.
The guys go, they put in the notes, love the show, fantastic, get me an XL, okay, dot, 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 and nothing else, no shipping address, right? I'm going, fuck, okay, listen. So now here's the thing, Russ, okay, so these are people who I have no idea who they are, their name's on there, it's like, here's Sergio Gallardo. Okay, yeah. Who wants a shirt? And I don't know them at all. The only correspondence I have with them is this e-transfer. So now I go to say, well, I'll just reply and say, hey, I need your shipping address. So, but you can't reply.
Oh, no. So you've got the money. They don't have the shirt.
In fact, I figured it all out. There's only one guy. So I got to find him. I got to find this guy. Okay?
Hopefully he's listening to the show.
He better be. Well, that's why I got lots of angles I can go on this guy to find out. But anyway, I said, you buy a shirt, we're going to mention your name. And so I got a bunch of them, but I'm going to bang them off, you know, through the show. But Glenn Junkie.
So now we're not going to have a show. We're just going to have names.
No, well,
you're just going to read off names.
Because we love them. I told these people they're reaching out. Yeah. And I say, Russ and I get a hell of a charge on all the comments from people on the show. And
yeah, we do.
So there's Jeffrey Karen and Glenn Junkie and Sean McDermott and Chris McCready and Daniel Lachelle, I think, or Daniel LaSalle. We got Joe. It looks like Joe Chavez. Oh, lives in Cambridge, Ontario. Mark Cashman, and a bunch of other people, including David McDonald, Ralph. Looks like Urech. Oh, we got them all. We got all kinds. Yeah, Karen McKay and Tiffany Redmond and Damon Thompson, Ron Pacini. My old buddy lives out in Vancouver now. Bruce Morrison and Patrick Grobe. So we'll mention a few others later. But thank you to all those people. And your shirts are coming. The shirts are coming, Russ.
They can also, we got the Suspendables Instagram account that I'm now in charge of. So that's what I've done. You're doing the shirts. I'm doing the...
I see that. That was a big day. You know what? You do shit when it comes to technical things,
fuck
okay?
You.
You do absolute shit. You get on here and you bullshit your way through a bunch of stuff that you do. There's no way that you're doing any of that paperwork for the Gauzer deal. This fantasy land that all me and all the listeners are going through. I get every second day I go, people call and go, what is this Gauzer? What is this thing?
Yeah.
You know, what is it, like Disneyland? I said, it is.
It is.
Disneyland for the rich.
Yeah, go online, check it out.
All of a sudden you get one little idea, okay? And I'm hearing from you 9 times every 2 hours. Well, Jimmy, I put up an Instagram account.
Well, because I wanted you to at least comment.
Yeah. Well, I am.
Now. Oh, I know. But you had to ask your kids.
Yeah, I did. I did. But
yeah,
like I said, Russ put up a Suspendables Instagram account, and if you want to reach out to him, make sure you do it by 10:30 in the morning because he'll be 9 White Claws deep. Okay, later on in the day.
Hey, that's not true.
No, I know it's not. You're working out. Wade Waters is who we're looking for. Okay, that's who I got to find out. Wade Waters, I need your fucking address. Okay. otherwise, you left me 35 snipes.
He's gonna file a lawsuit against you. Good idea, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Good idea. Spending more on freaking gas money for driving around trying to find
people. I got it all figured out. I meet with the girl tomorrow to put the first order in. So I'm all excited. Anyway, thanks everyone. Rusty, hell of a week. Lots happening in the world of sports, including the Grey Cup was yesterday. We got to mention that.
Yeah.
CFL. The Bombers beat my Hamilton Tiger Cats. I got crushed.
Oh boy.
I was saving money, and I laid the 200 on Hamilton.
Oh no.
Fuck, they were never in it. They got drilled. So congratulations to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Do you like that city?
The Peg?
Yeah.
You know, my dad and my uncle were born there.
No way.
Oh. And yeah, Winnipeg. And so I have a few family members there. I don't think any more, but always had a soft spot for Winnipeg. And when I played... And we'd go to Winnipeg. The only thing to do in the winter is to be inside. So we quite enjoyed the bars there. We had a good time when we went to Winnipeg. Winnipeg's a great city. A lot of good people there. And a lot of fun to be had because there's nothing you can do really outside unless you're dressed for it. And suits. Our dress code on the road was suits, no ties.
Jesus.
So we weren't out walking around the streets. We were inside meeting the people.
Someone 100 years meeting the peeps. Someone 100 years ago said it's the windiest city in the world, and that's the only thing people ever spoke about it. But it's kind of like Edmonton, really. You know, one of these towns that before they got NHL franchises that nobody even they were afraid to talk about it.
Almost. Yeah.
You know, and but I guess in the summer it's unbelievable there in Winnipeg. So I got a question right out of the hop here before we get into all the hockey stuff. It's from my buddy Johnny H. Golf.
Mm-hmm.
Hey Jungle, question for Russ. Thank you, Johnny. That's where we're doing the segment. He had one of his best statistical seasons, the only year he was in Minnesota.
Oh,
I didn't know this. because I don't like you enough to look up your stats.
Yeah. Right.
Was it easier to focus on hockey in a smaller city, boring nightlife, et cetera, compared to a Toronto or Montreal? Because we've talked about that before, what it's like to play in the big centers.
No, I think the focus is the same for every player around the league. When you go to the building, you work hard in practice. You go to the games, you try the same. It doesn't matter what city you're in. But I have to say that Minnesota and Edmonton back then had the best ice, and I was known for my skating. And I think that because the ice was so great in Minnesota, it really helped me. And Modano and I played a little bit together, not a lot. I played mm-hmm. mostly with Neil Broughton and Mike McPhee, and Neil Broughton should be in the Hockey Hall of Fame, in my opinion, and one of the greatest players I ever played with. He's just an awesome guy and a great, great player. And so because I played with Neil and Mike McPhee really helped my stats. So
was Broughton a tough guy? Am I up my ass here on that?
But not I never really fought, but he was tough. He was one of those guys that wasn't afraid of anything or anybody, but not a fighter. So, you know, a lot of people relate to tough guys as tough guys who fought.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was one of those guys who didn't fight and then would block shots, you know, go in every corner, stand in front of that. I mean, he wasn't a big guy, but he was really strong and was tough, just not a fighter.
I think I go back to Sudbury every year.
Why? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. Well, after that, I'm there about a day. No, I love going back there.
The big nickel's there, right?
The big nickel is
the
there.
The giant nickel?
It's a mining town. Nickel, yep. Nickel mine. Troy Crowder is from Sudbury.
Yeah, played with Troy.
And Todd. And someone told me, you did, eh? Because I want to ask you. Someone told me this guy was frighteningly tough.
Yeah, you just got to Google his fights. He was tough.
He was killer tough. You brought up Mike Modano. Russ, I recall there was a story there. It made me feel really sorry for him. Is there something where he got ripped off from his manager?
Yeah, I do know that he, I heard that he got ripped off. Yeah, I've never read the story. I've heard the story. And it's one of those things that you feel awful for anyone. Doesn't matter if you play hockey or not. Anybody who's been ripped off in their life, business or personal life, whatever. So I don't know to what extent that he got burned, but he got caught up in with somebody and some, and I can't really comment on
some investment deal.
Yeah, I guess that's what I heard. So, but he's Moses survivor. I think it was, if you look back on his stats, he had one year where he kind of dipped, and I heard that the owner took him aside, Hicks in Dallas, and said, look, you know, I understand this is happening to you, but you still got to perform. And then he, you know, Mo came out of it and played great after that, but he was struggling for a while. And I think it was that year when he got ripped off or burned or whatever, lost
right.
money.
You don't hear very often. The crazy guy who, because players get your, I mean, you would know better than anyone, you get involved in deals, you want to invest your money and stuff, and everyone knows the horror show that, it was out your way. The guy, Len Barry, who was perhaps a friend of yours, who ended up doing that development, and it just sort of crashed.
Yeah.
It was sort of a sad story, and I like that guy, Len Barry.
So I'll comment on both. I want to comment on Mo again. Mo was not a guy who, he was really tight with his money and saved all his money and did all the right things. So he wasn't one of these flamboyant guys that, you know, spent money, and he was very, very careful. And that is one of the surprising things that to me, because I was around him and he saved all his freaking money and somebody burned it. So I just wanted to comment on that it wasn't because Mo was, you know, a gambler or stupid with his money.
Foolish.
Just somebody else ruined it for him. Okay, with Len Barry, I met him when I moved to Victoria. Paris, I moved our kids up to Victoria from 2003 to 2007.
Okay.
Built our beautiful home up there. Wanted to our kids to experience living in Victoria and get them out of LA for a while. So we moved up there, and that's how I met Len Berry. Len Berry was building.
Retired NHLer.
Retired NHLer, played in Europe, played in the NHL, and he tied up this property and, well, back up a second. He was a member of Colwood Golf Course, lived on the golf course, and wanted a view and cut all the trees between his property and their property on their property down, and they suspended or kicked him out of the Colwood Golf Club.
Right.
And I guess so. I think it was Colwood, my chosen golf. Anyways, Colwood, one of the golf, I think it was Colwood Golf Club. And mm-hmm. then he goes, you know what? F you guys, I'm going to build my own golf course. And that's how that began. And then he tied up the property, went around to all his NHL friends, raised a bunch of money, mm-hmm. went to the bank, and they freaking gave him the money to do it. And he built the most amazing golf community in Western Canada. It's called Bear Mountain. And the debt was too, you know, it was just the interest on the debt. It was just, they couldn't keep up. I mean, it was successful, but they just spent way more money than they were bringing in, and eventually it collapsed. But it's a very successful development and beautiful in the Western communities of Victoria, British Columbia. And unfortunately, the guys who invested, you know, didn't get, I believe none of them got their money back. But for a while there, boy, it was a going concern. And I was bummed because I had an opportunity to buy into it. And my brother was like, nah, you're not doing it. Jeff was like, I don't want you doing it. So I didn't do it. And but I was a member of the club and played the golf course a bunch of times. And they did great things in the community, raised a bunch of money for charities, blah, blah, blah. And then unfortunately, it went under because, you know, all these hockey players that invested, I said this, we really need this thing to be successful in Victoria, because if it is, you're going to have all these retired NHL guys hanging out or retiring in Victoria and helping out in the community and this and that, and it failed. Mm-hmm. And anytime, you know, anyone's lost money, and the last thing you want to see is the place you lost the money.
I remember some funny stories for some of the guys I know here. And I mean, Russ, you're a pro player. I get this sense that once guys sort of sign a big ticket, certainly after the 90s, right? So the money started getting really big, that you get approached all day long from people about investing money. The athletes, I think that's the sense I get, that these deals are coming at you left and right.
Well, and you're right, because in the 80s when we were all making, you know, I was making between $75,000 and $105,000, mm-hmm. there was no financial advisors hanging around the rink. the scalper outside in Toronto would come in and go, do you guys want to sell your tickets?
Yeah, right.
I'll give you $20.
Yeah.
But then you're absolutely right that when the guys in all sports started making money, then people in that community, good and bad, started taking notice and trying to get guys to, you know, invest their money with. My younger brother was a financial advisor for 20 years, and I know,
sure, Bruce,
you know,
yeah.
that's what he did for a living and did it very successfully. And, you know, there's good people, more good people than bad. But there was all there, you know, the guys who I believe weren't on the up and up, all you had to say to them was, oh, great idea. Great idea. Here's my number of my agent, call them. And they never called.
Right. Right.
Right. Yeah. Oh, great idea. Yeah. Here's the phone number. Call them. I would call my agent at the time and I'd say, did you ever get a call? Nope. Not one.
Yeah. Scared them off. My favorite story is one of the guys here invested in a bar, you know, and I remember talking to his financial guy later, you know, he used to say, look, don't do that. Okay. This guy was a financial advisor and he said, you know, you buying a bar is the equivalent of me thinking I can play in the NHL. You know, like,
yeah.
You're gonna, right.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
One of my favorite stories is a guy did. He said, no, this will be great. 'Cause I'll bring all the boys there. And, so he invested in this bar And the team was on the road at the time for a long road trip, like 2 weeks or something. And when they got back to town, he called all his buddies and said, look, we got to go over there. I'm a bar owner, you know?
Yeah.
And so they all jumped in the limo and they went over there. And the place has got padlocked with chains on the front door.
Oh, no.
Yeah, oh, no. Going, this place is in receivership. The guy's like, where's my 100 grand?
You know, in Mexico.
It's in Mexico. Yeah, so at least they can laugh about it. They can laugh about it now. But
I think I read somewhere that Gretz wanted to, I've never asked Wayne this. I thought I read it in a book that he got approached to do the same. Invest in Byron Edmonton. And his financial advisor said, walk in, tip the hostess $100. When the waiter sits you down, tip them $100. And when you leave after the end of the night, tip the waiter $100. And you'll lose way less money. And they'll treat you like the owner.
Yeah, exactly.
But isn't that the truth? You just, you know, you've probably seen it in restaurants where you guys walk in and you can just see, like, the everything changes and this guy's got a wad or she's got a wad out just going
like he's at the peeler joint
with the fins. I wouldn't know about that.
Anyway, this week in hockey sort of thing, there's a bunch to talk about. You played for the Leafs, we talk about all the time, and Mike Babcock got fired from the Toronto Maple Leafs, which is crazy that that happened. This you know, the Leafs have been playing great the last few years. They weren't playing that bad. You know, if you don't know the story of the Leafs, they got a bunch of talent there now. Tavares and Marner and Austin Matthews and other guys are playing okay.
Fuck, they lost six in a row. What do you mean they weren't playing that bad?
But they fire the guy. Yeah, but they're not compared to everybody else. You know, there's only a few teams that are sort of running away with the Islanders are a great story. Crazy. Anyway, they fired the guy. Were you surprised, Russ?
Well, we talked about it, and I was saying that the easiest person to change is the coach. Mm-hmm. And if the players aren't if the message isn't getting through anymore and they stop listening, then you got to make a change. So they made the change, and then, of course, you know, they go out. They're on the road. They've won two in a row. Mm-hmm. And it just looks like a totally different team. And so obviously the players were having a tough time. And who, I don't know, I've watched the highlights, but they just look way looser and, you know, look like they got the handcuffs off a bit. But
yeah, you can tell that.
Yeah, you can see the way they're playing that they're flying around. And, you know, Tyson Barrie, Len Barrie's son, is out there. He's scored in both games. He hadn't scored all year.
Oh, that's his kid.
Yeah.
And I had no idea.
And they, you know, they traded for him. They traded Kadri for him and Kerfoot. Mm-hmm. And he's a rushing defenseman, supposed to be offensive. And he was not doing a thing, and now he's all over the ice. So obviously they let him loose, and he's starting to get better. But it's only two games. I mean, you can't say, oh, it's the absolute right thing to do because after two wins. But you know, they are playing better, so we'll see.
Keefe is the new coach. There's some fallout from this. Yes, we did talk about this last show. Don't panic. Okay, don't panic. We brought up the Mike Babcock firing. But there's been a bunch of residual negative stuff that has come down that really surprised me. What is, and I think maybe you told me this, Russ, is you just got to be careful what you say. You know, take the high road when you get traded. Take the high road when you sit. You talked about it. If you didn't listen to it, listen to the last episode before this one about the fight you had with. we got a huge following now for you on that thing with Pat Burns. But that is not the case here. In fact, guys have gone beyond not taking the high road, taking the lowbrow shit here at Babcock. Mike Commodore called him a piece of shit.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, Commie went after him.
There was that, and then Nazem Kadri was sort of pissed at the trade, his little thing. But then there was this story that has come out that looks like it's all true, that he sat Mitch Marner down, and I think this is psychotic, man, and said, "I want you to list players who are best to worst." Do I have this right?
Hardest working to the laziest or something like that?
Hardest working to the laziest. Make a list. And so he does it. And then Babcock takes the list and goes and tells all the players. Fucking crazy, man.
Yeah. I don't know why you do that. I said previously, like, I heard he's tough. I don't, like, we're starting to read some of the things, but I don't know if there's a coach in the NHL that hasn't offended or pissed off a player. So every coach has had to sit somebody, gas somebody. They don't like the way they play. They get rid of, you know, it happens. It's mm-hmm. human nature that you're going to like some people and not like other players. And I don't know Mike Babcock all that well. We played junior together against one another. He came in the league after I was done. I know guys who've played for him. I mean, his close friends and family are the only ones who know what kind of person he is, truly. Mm-hmm. And he might be a great guy. You know, so another tough guy is Berkey. And Brian Burke, I've known Berkey a long time, and I do know Brian Burke. And he has this outwardly persona that he's a tough guy, mean guy, you know, mm-hmm. but he's got the biggest heart. I mean, every time when he worked for the Canucks for Pat Quinn, he would always talk to my mom. He loved my mom. You know, he just had a soft side to him, mm-hmm. but he's a tough son of a bitch. And I don't know Babcock well enough to make that comment, but there sure are players coming out saying some shitty things. And a lot of players who are still playing probably are biting their tongue. I think the two players we've heard from are three. Well, two we've heard from don't play anymore, so they can't be hurt by their comments. Mm-hmm. But I hope Mike Babcock's a good person. I hope there's a side to him that he's a great guy and has a, you know, he's got some compassion. But I don't know if you can coach in the NHL and not leave a trail of people who are pissed off. I just, you're going to sit guys out. Your guys are not going to fit into your system, mm-hmm. and they're going to feel like they're getting fucked over. I've been in the position where I felt like I was getting fucked over. I've been in a position where I had a coach that thought I walked on water. Mm-hmm. And so it is the game. And unfortunately, you know, when you screw somebody over, like some of these guys feel like they've been screwed over, it costs some money. It costs some, you know, part of their pride. And mm-hmm. it sucks because we all go to the rink wanting to do our best. And if somebody's standing in your way, who's the coach, it's not going to sit well with anyone.
All that, Russ. But the question is, would you know, is these players reacting openly, reacting that they don't like the guy? And as we know now, nothing is sacred, man. If you the second you jump on social media, which these guys did, I don't like it. I don't think you should do that. I think you better be careful. It's a small world. Mike Babcock isn't going away no. yet. You know, and you could end up down the road somewhere. Were you okay with these guys speaking out against them, Russ?
Well, sorry.
Get back to the mic.
Yeah.
Okay, get back to the mic.
I had to go to the fridge.
Good.
I had 45 minutes on the bike, and I'm thirsty. Yeah. So.
I love that.
I think, you know what? I don't blame Commodore. I think that, you know, he has a story to tell. And it sounds like it's all true. So mm-hmm. I think good for him. Why should a guy who feels like he totally got fucked over not say something? I totally agree with it. I think that he should voice what happened to him, and you know what, he'll probably feel a lot better about it. I always wondered, because I saw, you know, the odd, you know, his jokes about Babcock, and I'm like, wow, whatever freaking happened there. And then
yeah, right.
You know, I read about it. So yeah. You know what? I'm so pissed off right
Why?
Now. Fuck.
Why?
I just opened Raspberry White Claw instead of Black Cherry.
Oh, shut up.
Fuck. Dang it.
Oh, my God. You should have bought a distillery, pal. That's what you should have bought as your investments. Anyway, that's the, you know, the other, everyone was calling Babcock a prick when he signed Spezza, when they signed him and he came back to his hometown. And his first game at home, all his friends and family were there, and Babcock sat him. Fuck. And it's not like this guy was a superstar. You know, he was at one time, but
yeah,
he sat him, and people, there was this huge outcry.
Yeah.
Going, you effing prick.
Yeah.
That he didn't do it. Some said, get over it. It's a big, big man's game. But it kind of backfired on Babcock, because he said, well, he doesn't know the nuances of our penalty kill. And then, but he let other guys on the kill who were less players and stuff. So
that's a stupid comment and statement, because you get traded mid-season and you don't even practice with the team. You show up, have morning skate, and that night you're on the fucking power play, or you're killing a penalty, you're playing a regular shift. So he had training camp.
Right.
I mean, give me a freaking break. What a stupid comment that is.
By Babcock.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, that's just dumb.
I wonder why he did it.
Probably because he was getting heat. You know, he probably didn't know what to say. So mm-hmm. He probably just went with the first thing that came to mind, and it was like, wrong yeah, hey, answer.
Yeah, hey, dummy.
Door number three. Fuck! Should have taken door number one.
Here's fuck. a couple other stories. I wanted to ask you, because I gambled all week.
Fucking.
Okay. And I got...
So now you're getting food from the church with your food stamps. Your cigarettes are coming in the back door.
Yeah, I got... So I used to... So I'm betting the games. I thought... And you don't mind the action either. You don't mind the action. You're a good card player. I've seen you play cards.
Well, I like going to Vegas. I like playing blackjack, but I do not gamble other than that.
You got to tell a story. I'm sure you have up your sleeve, because I've heard some great ones about gambling on the plane.
Oh, fuck.
With the players and the teams. Did you? Is it always cards that most guys play, Russ, when you're on the road?
Yeah, we started playing stook or blackjack on the plane, because I can't play poker. I tried, and when I got traded to the Rangers and got my fucking ass kicked, I was like, Gretz, we got to keep winning the playoffs. We got to go all the way, because fuck, I got to win my money back from these guys. we lost in the third round to Philly. I got a little bit back, but I still lost. But the funniest card game, we're flying. Anyway, I don't know if I've told this story. Freaking,
don't worry about it.
Well, we'll tell it again. So we're flying into Florida to play the Panthers, and we're on the New York Rangers jet. And if you've ever flown into Florida, when you get in near Miami, it's just like the worst turbulence ever. And I've flown a lot, so I can tell you about turbulence. So we got the two, Gretz is sitting in the first class seat facing Messier and all Samuelson. And Samuelson, and there's Esatikin and I are in the aisle sitting on Gatorade buckets. So there's four seats, two facing each other, and we're on the Gatorade buckets, and we hit this turbulence, and Gretz grabs his seat, because we all know, we've all read that Wayne Gretzky's scared of flying.
And he is. So he is.
Gretz grabs his seat. He grabs his armchair handle, and he pulls up on the tab that makes the seat move. Well, I could barely get to my seat to get my seatbelt on, and Wayne was on like a ride of all rides. The seat was going sideways, front, back, and he was screaming bloody murder, like we were gonna crash, and he was yelling at the pilot, Red Berenson, Red fucking Berenson, this all your fault. We never played cards again.
Yeah,
but that was an expensive card game. That one, that was poker, and It was crazy. But the we played in Vancouver. We played, and we used to write down like an IOU what your bet was playing blackjack. And Jimmy Dowd lost. He lost so much money to me that he threw me his keys and said, "It's yours."
Oh no!
No, and I didn't make him pay, but he lost a car.
Nice. Yeah, that's it. I love to hear those stories.
Lost a car.
We have let's a couple other things. One is Robert Bertuzzo, who plays for St. Louis.
Yeah.
Cross checks Victor Arvidsson.
Yeah.
In a game. Well, I'll explain it quickly. So they're down at the ice. They're Bertuzzo's defending. It's at his own net. Arvidsson has his back to him. He's right in front of the net, and he cross checks him into the crossbar of the net. It's one of those ones you used to see back in the day when it was allowed, and guys who sat in front of the net just got the shit kicked out of them. You don't see it much anymore. But anyway, he cross-checked me, fell down onto the ice, and he was sort of almost had his head in his hands, and the play was blown dead. And fuck, if this guy doesn't bear down on him and absolutely throttle him again, cross-check in the back, really hard, like a vicious move. Like it looked like a snap factor thing, you know?
Yeah.
And this guy gets hurt. Arvidsson's going to be out for 2, 4, 6 weeks or something.
No way.
Yeah, and I really admit when I saw it, I said, that was fucking brutal, man. Brutal. And he only got 4 games. He got suspended for four
games.
That's
where I think it's fucking bullshit.
Do tell.
Well, if you take a guy, okay, there's he screwed up and then he snapped and but that guy now, if he's out 2, 4, 6 weeks, that's how long the player who hurts the player should be out for. Mm-hmm. I mean, 4 games versus 2, 4, 6 weeks, that makes no sense.
Right.
None.
Right.
Like you're out suspended without pay as long as this guy can't play. I mean, that's the guy's one of their best players. It's ridiculous.
Right. So what do you do, right? And they've been talking about it for years.
Change the fucking rules.
So one thought is you got to hammer these guys in the pocketbook because this is a perfect example of where this isn't working. Bertuzzo's not that great a player. Giving him 4 games is like big deal, you know. Kicking him out for the rest of the year is no big deal. And yet this guy got really hurt. And I mean, it just on all levels was wrong. The guy had his back to him. The play was stopped. He was already hurt. Yeah. You know, this guy's got he's a repeat offender. So one of them, Russ, is it ain't working when you get these sort of lopsided situations. You know, you never see superstar players do it.
Well, I disagree with it's not. It is working because the head injuries are way down. But when you have an instance like this, they should just throw the book at him and say, sorry, you know what? When he's ready to play, so are you. And he's going to get paid while he's injured and you're not.
Even if he's knocked out for the rest of the year, Russ?
Fucking right. It was because of him he's hurt. He hurt the other player. He injured the other player. It's not like it was an accident. He frickin' purposely cross-checked him not once but twice when he was down. Mm-hmm. He could have stopped. I mean, you know what? He could have stopped himself from doing that. And if he knew in the back of his head, oh, if I hit this guy one more time, you know, I could face a longer suspension. But four games, that's still going to hurt him. Like 4 games, it's going to cost him a lot of money, I'm sure. But how is that fair? One player's out for 10 or 12 games who's on the receiving end of the cross check, and the other guy is out for 4 games. It makes no sense.
Yeah, I agree. Now, what happened was the first time he cross checked him, the ref's right there, throws his arm up, penalty,
right?
And then he looks at the ref and goes, you know, seriously, throws his head back and then hammers the guy again. Knowing he's getting a penalty.
Well, the first, you know, cross-checking is cross-checking, but the fact the guy was down on the ice on his hands and knees And then he cross-checks him again. Like, give me a freaking break. The first cross-check isn't the issue. It was the second one. The first one, if he cross-checked him in front of the net while the guy's there in a hockey position, whatever they want to call, and he hurt him and the guy goes down, cross-checking is a penalty. It was the one where the guy is defenseless.
Right.
Down. Right. That's the issue, not the cross-checking. I'm not saying like, okay, I cross-checked you, Jim, and I broke your arm by accident. I'm out. I'm talking about he cross-checks him. Okay, that's fine. Gets a penalty. But when he's laying on the ground, he injures the guy while he's down.
It was gross.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was gross. No. Yeah.
It just showed it on TV, by the way, while we're talking.
What about the old day, Russ? When the coach taps Knuckles Magoon on the shoulder and says, get out there and throttle that guy.
Yeah, but that was allowed back then. It was different time back then where the guys police themselves. I've told you before, I don't ever remember getting an elbowing penalty or a cross-checking penalty because I wasn't a fighter. And if you did that, you better be ready to scrap.
Mm-hmm.
So the game, in fact, was probably a lot cleaner in a lot of ways because guys like me couldn't go do shit like they're getting away with now because you don't have to fight. I mean, frick, back then, man, if you speared a guy, you cross-checked a guy, you elbowed a guy, you better be ready to fight because that's basically an invitation. So when the fighting became a bit of a non-issue, that's when the game became dirty, in my opinion, and the guys started hitting in the head more. I mean, my brother Jeff got his bell rung a million times because he did the same thing. Guys were paying him back. I mean, Wilf Paymont knocked me out.
Thank you, Wilf.
Yeah, on purpose. Fuck you. And then the other times were accidents. You know, I got pushed from behind. I hit my head on the boards.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, guy, you know, I got hit hard, but not in a dirty sense. Like, you know, I don't know if I'm making any sense, but
I get it. Yeah.
The head hunting with guys who can't back it up just pisses me off.
Why isn't the league doing that, Russ? Why aren't they saying, this has been talked about for years, is you injure a guy and a penalty, okay? Intentionally injure a guy, which this guy did. It was an intent to injure. And this has been going on for years where people say, first and foremost, you're missing as many games as this guy is, at the least. Why hasn't the league adopted that?
Because I think there are situations where it could look dirty, but wasn't. And it wasn't intentional. And then a guy gets injured and then everyone's going to go, okay, now you got to suspend him for same amount of time. And I think that's where the problem is. Yeah. This Bertuzzo thing is a joke. Right. I mean, he should be out as long as this guy. I'm just watching it again on TV. So that's where I think the problem is that say you go and you give a guy a hip check and you blow the guy's knee out, then they're going to say, well, he did it intentionally when he really didn't. I think that's the problem is it's going to take a bit to decipher between intent and accidental.
Most people are of the school of thought, this is way too weak a penalty.
Yeah.
The four games.
So, and you know what? You know what would be perfect right now is if they came back and went, you know what? We were wrong. We're giving you 12 games.
Yeah.
You know, Brian Burke, when he was in charge of disciplinary for the NHL, my brother told me the story. He goes, he did something to somebody, something dirty.
Go ahead and burp. Okay.
sorry. And he got a penalty, kicked out, and then Berkey called the lock. Like, okay, you got a call with Berkey. So Jeff gets on the phone with Berkey and he goes, did you mean to do that? And Jeff lied and said, no, I didn't. Right. And then he goes, okay, well, I'll be in touch. And then Jeff, I don't know if he had a shower or what, but he went back and he called Berkey back in New York and said, Berkey, I was lying. I did mean to do that. And he goes, you're lucky you called me back because I was going to give you more games. He got suspended.
Right.
But Berkey was going to throw the book at him because he lied to him.
That's funny.
Yeah,
isn't That's it? Funny.
but he still suspended Jeff, and he loved my brother. And but he suspended him, I don't know, for how many, like three games, or I'd have to ask Jeff the story. But when he called Berkey back, he goes, yeah, you're lucky you called me.
I would have got someone else to call. I would have said, hey, Rusty, get over here. You got to make a call to Brian for me. It reminds me of the days when guys used to run block for guys who were, I was like, you know, 2 hours late, you know, from getting home. And then someone would say, well, fuck, why don't you just phone your wife and tell her? I'm like, don't be ridiculous. My buddy used to say, why get in shit twice? You're going to get on the phone and then you're going to get it.
Well, Pat Burns used to always say to us about curfew, he goes, don't be a minute. If you're going to be a minute late, you might as well be a day late because you're going to get the same penalty whether you're a minute or a day late.
So you might as well go, yeah.
Yeah, whatever. If you're going to go, you better go and make it worthwhile.
Yeah, we're staying out past midnight, boys. Yeah. One of the other topics before we go today, the NBA, there was a little story today about the NBA's talking about mitigating and how, what are we going to do about, I can't believe they're already talking about it in the NHL too, about teams tanking to get high draft picks.
Yeah.
Speaking of things that have been around for a while to talk about. And in soccer, they've got these sort of, you know soccer better than anyone, but they've got these sort of, in the middle of the season, they have these other cups that you can play for. And they're very prestigious to be able to play for one of these football cups. And it seems to have solved the problem that a lot of guys want to win these things. The NBA is talking about, you know what, what we should do is have this sort of mid-season thing, call it the NBA Cup for lack of a better term. They don't, you know, and where teams are in, there's six teams in five divisions or something like that. Anyway, stop it. I'm trying to explain. People are already talking about it in Ottawa and other places that, hey, fuck, don't win too many games here. We want the high pick. There's something inherently wrong with that, Russ.
But that's why we have the lottery in the NHL, right?
Well, not enough of it, right?
Well, but, I mean, the teams have moved up and back. I mean, it's not always fair. You get more chances to get the first pick if you're the worst team in the league, but it doesn't mean you're going to get it. So the NHL, I think, has it going on. I think they've figured it out. And I know because everybody's so freaking nervous during the draft lottery. You know, when their teams are in that lottery, they're freaking nervous. So if they're nervous, they're nervous for a reason. That means they can go down. So it's working. And I've been around the Aquilini family during the draft lottery, and they're anxious to see. And they've lost a couple spots. So.
All right. Strike that whole story, Jim, from the program.
Yeah. Unless we're talking about Steve Nash and the NBA, you know, we don't really need to go there.
Right. Speaking of punishments, we are endeavoring one of the features I want to do in the next week or two is we want to get your wife on, Paris.
Yeah, I tried to get her today, but she's...
She chickened out? She chickened out?
Well, she's working... She's a designer, right? She's doing Andrew Whitworth. He number 77 for the Rams. He lives in our community here at Sherwood, and they want they're having a bunch of teammates over for Thanksgiving, and she's doing this house for them, and they want it all done by Thanksgiving on this Thursday. Yeah, so she's just whipping around. Busy and loving it. She just absolutely loves it, but she's busy and running around with her head cut off. So
I want to ask her, speaking of suspensions, you know, the best way that I got punished by my wife for fucking acting up or being late or drunk and coming late was really, Russ, I gotta admit, the best way was physical punishment. Okay? It really was. Okay. It was like no yelling or screaming. She'd wait till I fell asleep.
Yeah.
Okay, I was late, sneak into bed, and I fell asleep. Ugh. And then I woke up like being snipered, being shot in the head as she was driving a heel of a construction boot into my head.
Thank you.
Whack.
Paris is listening to the show. Don't give her any ideas.
Well, what does she do? She must have punished you. She must have done something.
Well, let her answer that.
Okay, we're gonna talk to Paris. Hopefully, we'll do it next week. We'll be able to talk to her. Russ, we got to put a wrap on her, baby. Another great show. Unless there's something else. Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
No. Are you going to end with a joke or?
Oh, I could end with a joke. You know what? You got me. Okay. Okay, I got a joke. Okay. So this is one of my all-time favorites. This is the story, Russ, of the mosquito repellent salesman. Okay? And he's out trying to sell mosquito repellent. It's hot. It's 90 degrees. There's flies everywhere. And he's out in the country, you know, knocking on these farmers' doors. And he's having no luck. And he's losing his patience. And he knocks on another door before he's going to call it a day. And this farmer opens the door. And he's got the shirt and tie on, you know, the guy. And he says, "Hi, how are you? I'm here. I'm a mosquito repellent salesman." And the farmer goes, "Oh, fuck off." Right? And he goes to slam the door. And the guy puts his foot in the door and says, "Wait a minute. Just hang on here. Give me a break." You know, and the farmer's swatting flies out of his head, you know. And he says, "Listen, this repellent I'm selling is the best on the market." And the farmer goes, "Oh, it is it?" As he's swatting away flies, he goes, "I'll tell you what, pal. If that repellent is so good, I'm going to take you out to the middle of one of my fields, naked, okay? And I'm going to tie you up to a tree with your hands behind your back, and I'm going to leave you there all night. If that repellent works, I will buy every can you can supply," you know? And the guy says, "Okay, fuck, I'll do that for sure," right? So he has a little dinner, he gets naked, the farmer drags him up to the the middle of the field. Picture this now, the guy's leaning against the tree, and he's got his arms tied around the back of the tree, right? And got his feet fucking tied up to the tree, and he leaves them there all night. And in the morning, the farmer's walking out there, and as he gets closer to the tree, he sees the guy's all, his neck's down, he's all bent, and he's gaunt, and he's fucking dehydrated. And the farmer says, "Hey, pal, so how was that?" And the guy says, "No problem with the mosquitoes, but doesn't that fucking calf have a mother?" Oh, I hope I don't have to explain that to everyone anymore. God. Rusty, before we go, we got some other names we want to thank. Jerry Sarducci's listening. Gord Crossman, Wade Waters, I got to hear from him about your address. Robert Warren and Wes Medler and Edwards, John Edwards. Terry Burwell, love Terry. Kyle Power, Colleen Bellina, Leanne Mumford, and our research guy, Mark Mayhew. So thanks to all those people for listening. And we'll get to more stories next week. You didn't fail us again, Rusty. It was good. All right?
My friend.
Have a nice glass of red, and we'll talk to everybody next week.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you, Russ.
All right.
Good job, man.
Here, you got to listen to this. I'll send you this cartoon. It's a guy and his wife lying in bed.
Yeah.
It's a cartoon thing. But okay. See if you can hear this.
I'll bet you can't tell me something that would make me happy and sad at the same time.
What?
I'll bet you can't tell me something that would make me happy and sad at the same time.
You have the biggest penis out of all of your friends.
Okay, now we can go. Attaboy, Rusty. We're going to see. We'll talk to everybody next week. We got two jokes we can discuss. Get back to doing what you're doing.
Okay.